Hello, this is Robert Stark. I am joined here with Rachel Haywire. She runs the website Trigger Warning, and she is the author of Asphodexia, and she has a new book out now called The New Reaction. Rachel, nice having you on.
Hi. Yeah, and thanks for having me on your show.
And I'm also joined with a very special guest co-host, The Truth Will Live.
Hi, how's it going?
I like her. I heard that she was honest.
I'm so
giggly. You've read the book, and that's part of the reason I'm having you on, because I haven't read the book yet, but you've actually read it, so I'm sure you'll have a lot of good questions to ask.
I have actually read it.
Yay.
So you want me to start?
I'll start things off. So, sure. Rachel, can you just sort of tell us, give kind of the audience like a brief sort of biography for people out there who are not familiar with you?
Man, I hate talking about myself these days because people, they make judgments just based on how I look, and they think, you know, somebody who looks like me couldn't possibly think like me. So let's just say that I had a shitty childhood and I saw what was going on and I became a writer. Let's just leave it at that.
Okay. But your book certainly covered these issues.
Yeah. I think a lot of people, they grow up in environments where they think that things are supposed to be one way because they've been told their whole lives that that's how things are. And then, you know, they become outcasted from their family for whatever reason, and they start to open their eyes more, and the outsider perspective gives them a new outlook, which is actually much closer to the truth, and that's where I found myself.
And your first book, Asphodexia, is about your more about your personal life story.
Yeah, it's about traveling across the country and partying a lot, meeting up with a bunch of freaks, doing a bunch of drugs, and just kind of like living my life to the max. And at the time, I was very, very left, very liberal, very, very anti, you know, establishment. I'm still very anti-establishment. I just see who the new establishment is, and it's left. So.
Would the old you dislike the new you?
I probably think the old me wouldn't talk to me because she wouldn't want to get right-wing cooties. She'd think that I was really uncool and problematic.
So when did you first sort of get exposed to stuff like the alternative right and neo-reaction?
I guess I want to say that when I was making industrial music, I had always been interested in it, but I was never really public about it. You know, I sort of used it like as performance art. I did it as satire because that was the only way that I really knew how to express these thoughts, because other people were expressing them satirically. So I just kind of did that and didn't really, like, come to terms with what I truly believed. You know, I thought that I was performing. You know, because nobody could possibly think that way, you know, especially not a young Jewish alternative woman. I mean, because people like me, we don't think like that, you know. It's funny because I understand why people, they're like, what the fuck, you know, like why would someone with all of this alternative culture and, you know, media attention, you know, even bother with the alternative right at all? Like, what am I doing in neo-reaction? All sorts of questions. It's really just a matter of you think how you think. You know, no matter what you look like, no matter what your background is, your thoughts are your thoughts. And I'm very focused on the mind. I'm very focused on ideas, and I'm very focused on philosophy and political philosophy, that kind of thing. And I think it's possible to literally be a punk rocker who lives in a hipster neighborhood, you know, with all sorts of postmodernism around them, and to be interested in authors like Evola and Spengler, I think that's normal now. And it's becoming more and more common, actually.
It's the new counterculture in a sense, because the establishment is basically the establishment. I mean, the word left and right have become like such superficial terms. Sometimes I don't like using them, but I guess I'll say like the alternative right in a sense is sort of like the new counterculture to the establishment, which I guess is on the left.
Yeah. I've been saying that for a while, and other people notice it too. I mean, like, I'm actually in Chicago right now, and I was chilling with some people nearby, and they were all like these young alternative musicians, and they see the same things. You know, they talk about this collapse of this society that's turning into this big postmodern nothing, about how everything is becoming so meta that nobody knows what anything means anymore clearly. And these are young people with tattoos, you know, with piercings. They're musicians that are very participatory in the counterculture. They run their own clubs. You know, they have their own nights, and they think the same things that we do. They just haven't articulated them literally. They're still on the sarcasm, satirical trip. But when you talk to them privately, you can actually have a really good conversation with them. So they just need to learn a bit more, you know, maybe do a little more reading.
And basically, like, what the center is, the establishment, is sort of like the dominant consumer culture. And then, in a sense, basically the far right and the far left, they overlap with each other.
That's what I say. That's what I've seen. Because, like, how it felt to be an anarchist against the Bush administration and like, capitalist against the war in Iraq is exactly how it feels right now to be against politically correct totalitarianism, to be against cultural Marxism, to be against the meaning of everything being completely distorted for political, you know, purposes, just about the whole media academic bullshit that we're going against now. Like, I feel like that was, like, going against the war in Iraq. It's the same feeling. Like, going to my first punk show is how I felt when I went to my first, quote-unquote, right-wing conference. You know, same, like, these are the people that are actually changing things. These are the people that are actually making society different. You know, these are the leaders. These are the radicals, the revolutionaries. I'm sure you hate that term. But that's how I always thought. And another thing, that the far left and the far right were not considered very different by the PC establishment. We're all just considered a bunch of poor, you know, losers. You know, anarchists, fascists, anything in between. We're all just considered the lower class now. So it doesn't matter if you're far left or far right. You're not a part of the system now.
So. You wrote an article called, I think it was called Breaking Up with the Neo-Reaction. And did you write the article before you wrote the book? So
Sorry, go ahead.
Some people might be a little bit confused if you're, like, either disowning neo-reaction or endorsing it, but basically you're neither, you're just analyzing it is what you are doing.
No, I would say that I was interested in it for a while, and I didn't agree with what people in neo-reaction were talking about. I agreed with the idea of starting a counter-resistance, but I didn't like the direction that they were going in. And when I wrote the new reaction, it was sort of to present this new ideology that I felt, you know, was better than what the neo-reactionaries on Twitter were doing. Because I think that all they want to do is, like, create a new Frankfurt School. They just want to become, like, the leftist media power mongers, but they want to do it from the right. And I'm like, well, that's the same as shit. You know, I never agreed with any of that. And I thought that they focused too much on race and too much on religion, too much on, oh, well, you can just go have kids and that'll fix everything. So, you know, I didn't want to be involved with them anymore. I wanted to create something else. So, yeah.
And your new site is called a Trigger Warning. What are some of your objectives with the new site, Trigger Warning? And that's with Ann Sterzinger, who I've interviewed on this show.
We want to create an entirely new media channel for people like us to express ourselves, and we want it to be appealing to the new generation. A lot of the right-wing alternative right sites now, they're a little bit out of touch with what's going on with the cultural zeitgeist. So we need people that are in touch with what is going on to speak directly against it, because, you know, we're there. We're right in the middle of it.
So I read in your book that you went to the H.L. Mencken Club.
Mm-hmm.
What year did you, or who was speaking, or what was that like?
It was, I think, like 3 years ago. Richard Spencer was there. Paul Godfrey was there. I'm trying to remember who else. It was kind of a long time ago. I didn't know the names of a lot of the people at the time. I met them later online, and mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, that was you. I met you at the conference. And this guy, Kevin Slaughter, was there, who runs, I think, like a book publishing company, and he's, like, from the counterculture, too,
mm-hmm.
Whatever that means now. I enjoyed myself a lot because I felt that it was the first place that I could openly talk to people about my ideas without being ironic or satirical. You know,
right.
I didn't have to be a hipster there. I didn't have to disguise myself as a hipster. I could just talk about what I truly felt.
Right. I come from a pretty similar background to you because I was doing, like, punk rock stuff, too. And, I went on tour, and, that was actually kind of when I started, like, questioning all of these things. And, like, when I used to DJ for this, like, college radio station, and I was, like, marching in this gay pride festival. That's kind of an hour ago. Like, literally, I know. That's a joke between someone, Robert. I don't remember if you remember the marching for gay rights thing, but
I don't think
that
any gay people even go to gay pride anymore. It's just like straight white liberals trying to.
I remember you mentioned in it. I think this is in one of your interviews. The same people who bullied you when you were younger are the same ones who are now like marching for gay pride.
Yeah, they're just the herd. They're the Untermensch. They're the followers. They're the 99%, and they're going to keep doing it.
I think the theory is, and I've actually thought of this too, but I wasn't smart enough to copyright it, but there's like the 98%, which is just the masses, the conformists. Then you have the 1% of people who like are the exploiters. I guess examples of that would be sort of like people kind of like phony sort of popularity or like the economic elite, the bankers.
There's a 1% within the 1%. I see it as similar. I always called it like the 99% and then the two parts of the 1%, but you could also call it the 98 and then the two different 1%, one being the 1% that controls the 99, and the other being the 1% that wants nothing to do with the control. They don't want to join the circus, and they don't want to control the circus. They don't want to be a part of the spectacle, and they don't want to be the puppet masters. They don't want to be in the puppet show at all. We just want to be left the fuck alone.
When I was marching in that gay pride, that was like when I kind of realized that the left is the establishment, because all of the all of these like major corporations and things like that were in the parade, and I was and that was like when I started noticing. I was like, wait, this isn't what I want, or like, I don't know, because I wasn't I was never like an Occupy Wall Street person or anything, but I always like distrusted. No.
Yeah, the conclusion that I've come to is that if we have a democracy, what we're going to have is a bunch of horrible sociopathic shitheads pretending to be humanist progressives, because that's what sells. Also, the further left the social spectrum goes, the further right the economy goes, there is nothing that sells like hope, progress, you know. making the world a better place. That's a million-dollar idea right now. Every startup in Silicon Valley is talking about how they're making the world a better place. They're trans, gay, inclusive, yada, yada, yada. They don't believe any of it. They're just saying themselves. Mm-hmm. If it's sold to be, you know, like some executioner, then they would have, we're pro-execution. You know, if that's what the people wanted, that's what they would provide.
Do you believe in progress?
Do I believe in progress? Not any more than I believe in God or justice. I'm going to go with no.
Yeah. Well, what do you say to, like, the liberal canned answer to that, which is like, well, we got rid of slavery and women have rights and blah, blah, blah. That's like the canned answer to denial of progress or denial of liberal awesomeness. Is that
I say
they
lying.
Slavery?
That, I say they're lying. They didn't get rid of anything. They just concealed it and they gave it a new name and they gave it a new form. They didn't change anything. Things are just as barbaric now as they were then. We just have a civilized veneer.
Mm-hmm.
There are still slaves now. There are still women who have absolutely no rights now. I mean, it's still happening. It's just not publicized now. What's publicized is like their stories of triumph against the Republicans or whatever. But it is the same shit, different era.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about this? All these people who call themselves free thinkers, but like they fancy themselves to be free thinkers. But what I found is that people who are truly free thinking are incredibly rare. And what would a society consisting solely of true free thinkers work?
I think that has the potential to be either really good or really bad. Because if we had a society of true freethinkers, it might be like a war of the gods kind of scenario, you know, where we're all hating on each other because we have too much in common and we're all like super aggressive and powerful, so we might end up killing each other. So maybe we shouldn't have a society of freethinkers. Because if we did, you know.
Within, like, basically dissident movements, whether they're cultural or political, there's a lot of infighting. So I think you're right. Maybe you do need, like, the conformist masses. Maybe they do serve a purpose. Maybe you do need people to, like, control. Or having the free thinkers, like, not be everyone, but just be in a position of power.
Yeah,
I leaders. But I don't know.
The way to do it is to, if say that we're going to create a society full of only free thinkers, like right now, what we would do is make sure that these people aren't like very hostile and antisocial in a way that would hurt. This is hard for me to say because I don't really know where I stand on this. Like if you put a bunch of free thinkers on an island and they all kill each other, who am I to say that's not what should happen? You know, that sounds kind of fucked up, but if that's people's natural will, then maybe that is what should happen. I'm still not sure.
So you've been involved with a lot of counterculture, and you begin to see, like, the counterculture movement as being just as closed-minded and basically identical to mainstream culture.
Yeah, I mean, I would argue, like, from a counterculture perspective, that they're not really the counterculture. They're just the mainstream counterculture. That's why they all look like hipsters now. They don't even, look goth or punk or industrial anymore. They look like a sub-mix of all of those. I'm kind of like multiculturalism, where everybody is a bunch of different ethnicities. Now with the counterculture, everybody is a bunch of different subcultures, and it's actually the same thing. Instead of, you know, the subculture melting pot. So, it's all bullshit.
Do you think, multiculturalism or, like, the sort of elimination of, like, organic cultures has, like, created this void where people create these subcultures, but the subcultures are, like, basically created by kids, so they're all, like, kind of misguided in a way?
I think that a lot of white people feel like they don't have an identity, and that they turn to subcultures or they turn to adapting other ethnicities, you know, and acting like them, like everything from wearing, you know, the the type of clothing that they would wear in Islam to bragging about all of their Hindu, Buddhist, you know, propaganda, materialism. You know, it's all the same. They feel like they don't know what it means to be white and that they need somewhere else to go.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was getting at.
Yeah, it's kind of strange because I feel like a lot of white people right now, like all they want to do is prove how non-white they are.
Mm-hmm.
And people who aren't into that, you know, like they don't know what to do. I guess like since I'm Jewish, it's like I'm supposed to like have a Jewish identity or something like that. But I never felt that I got along with that tribe. They always outcast me because I was very outspoken and not very PR friendly. I came off kind of aggressive and, you know.
I find them to be very conformist for the most part and like even more into like social shaming and conformity.
Yeah,
that's my experience.
Communication is like the ultimate form of control. Language is like the ultimate end all. They claim that nothing would exist without language. Not just Jewish people, not only Jewish people, but academic elite types. They claim that is everything because they want to control the narrative through their verbal, you know, abilities. I just think that's shitty. You know, it's just a shitty thing to do.
Do you think there could ever be, like, a movement composed of pure truth or society composed of pure truth as opposed to convenient lies, which is, like, kind of what we have right now?
Yeah, I think we can. And I think we're doing that now. That's what's up. But there's going to be a lot of infighting because we all tell the truth and we're not going to all agree with each other. Because we're strong people who don't conform, and because we're free thinkers, we're not going to mindlessly agree with one another.
Mm-hmm. I was reading in your book, you were talking about like changing the nature of man, and like creating like a national futurist society where like we create like a new species, sort of. Do you think like that type of thing is like trying to play God, and maybe it's what's the word I'm looking for? Doomed to fail because it's like trying to have like control over nature when we're slaves to nature.
I understand that argument, but at the same time, there are all these different autonomous nations that are forming. You know, there's a lot of secessionist movements. If people want to go and form their own species, they can go ahead as long as nobody is doing it, you know, through force, as long as not like you're forced to become a part of this new being. You know, people can go off and become whatever they want.
You write for the site Attack the System, and I'm also like, I'm also an official contributor to that site as well. That's basically like what they advocate, like pan-secessionism, like creating a bunch of small countries. So you could get like-minded people could come together. And it wouldn't, like some people are advocating doing it like just on race, but there's some people advocating that. But hypothetically, you could have a bunch of small countries where every way of thinking could have their own little country.
Yes, exactly. I really am not that interested in race, and for that reason I don't get along with a lot of people in the alternative right and the neo reaction. I see race as a psychic thing, like Evola did. Race is a mental thing. There are there's different types of people who think in different types of ways, and I think that's what race should be about, and that's national futurism. You know, it's people who are on the same psychic wavelength. You know, I'm coming together to form a new species, essentially. You know, like Hitler didn't understand Nietzsche at all. Like if there was somebody who actually read Nietzsche and was like, "Hey, I want to create the Übermensch tomorrow," it wouldn't be like material thing, you know.
Yeah, Hitler's concept of Übermensch was purely about like physical appearance.
Yeah, exactly, and that was so stupid. Because that's It had nothing to do with Adam. Say we really did create a society of Ubermensch, it would be people who thought in a similar way, people who were leaders, people who went against the herd, who went against the pretty lies, and that could be anybody.
You think tribalism can be eliminated, like, within a society? Like racial tribalism?
Probably not. No, I think tribalism is genetic in a lot of ways, and it's just it's the human animal instinct. I don't think we can get rid of it. No, we can be more individualistic, but I don't think we can like get rid of the root desire to belong. No.
Yeah.
I think some people are better at it. Are less tribal than others.
With transhumanism, so how would you like implement like selecting the traits of people who are, say, those specific traits we're talking about, like people who are more nonconformist, free thinkers? How do you select those people and get them together? I mean, how would that be implemented? It sounds like a good idea, but it's also kind of abstract.
Yeah, no, it's definitely utopian, and I don't have a concrete map for it, and if I did, I probably wouldn't share it, because, who knows what would happen to me. but I think it's just a matter of identifying people based on the way that they think. You can talk to somebody for a certain amount of time, and, you can ask them questions, and you can sort of figure out if they think for themselves or if they just go along with what they think they should. So I would start with the hypothetically administering some type of like psychic kind of test, like for example, if you told somebody to follow a command, right, and they followed it blindly, then you would know they wouldn't be allowed into the society, hypothetically. I've heard that there were like certain genetic traits that you could identify for conformity, that there was actually like some type of conformity gene. So, like, if you want to get really fanatical, if some genetic scientist, took that conformity gene and found a way to get rid of it, who knows what could happen? Oh, man, I don't know if I can say that on air. Oh, shit, I just broke it off.
I mean, there could be, I'm sure there's people who, genetically, the way they are, the same individual, if born into, say, if they were born in Nazi Germany, they would support Hitler, and if they were born today, they would, like, support the PC establishment. I think some people are just wired to be conformists.
Yes, and I think that they are a lower prototype. I think they're a lower race, a lower psychic race. They're not, like, scientifically different from humans, but they're definitely different mentally, and they definitely are inferior.
I think a lot of these SJWs would be really good Nazis.
I think so, too. I mean, they're the type of people that Hitler recruited. They're the type of people that Stalin recruited, people that just wanted to do what everybody else was doing because they felt like it was the good thing to do. They wanted to be on the home team. Hitler had a home team, just like Stalin had a home team. Now the home team is the social justice team. So, yeah, they'd be good at pulling the gas chambers down. That's what they'd be doing. They'd be gassing us right now, and if they had the power to do so.
I think they would be gassing us right now, too.
Yeah, it's pretty fucked up, because they have the numbers, but what we have is the ideas, what we have is the leadership, and what we have is the ability to truly think for ourselves. So I think maybe we should just, like, get the fuck away from them and try not to kill each other in the process.
Do you think a lot of people, like, involved in the transhumanist movement, which is something I'm not – well, I wasn't that familiar. I've heard of it, but until I've read about you, it wasn't. I didn't research it that much. But do you think there's politically correct barriers within it, and do a lot of
absolutely.
Them think, like, in a sense, it is kind of eugenics, but they feel uncomfortable with being associated as a eugenics movement.
Okay, so transhumanism is right now. It's just about like buying a bunch of technology. They really aren't interested in the kinds of things that we are. And the ones that are interested in genetic engineering, they don't publicly talk about it, because if they do, then they get blacklisted from the community. It happened to me. I was a well-known transhumanist. I was on the board of directors for a big transhumanist organization. I expressed, I guess, what you could consider eugenic ideas, and suddenly they're all like, you can't be associated with us, you can't work with us, and it was just, it was a mess.
What was the idea?
And
well,
within
like the stuff that I told you guys just now, I said that we needed to, I had a group called Transhuman Separatists, and I said, like, we, the mentally strong, need to get away from the human followers, you know, and form a greater nation. And they're like, this girl is a PR mess. So, I mean, I know that it's a bit utopian and that it sounds a little crazy. I'm not going to claim that any of it is scientific or anything like that. I'm just going to say, like, I'm a philosopher. I have some ideas, and it might be cool to do something with them.
Do a lot of transhumanists, do they just care about technology, but they have little interest in stuff like philosophy and the arts?
Yeah, that's what I noticed. They have said that philosophy is useless because it is not scientific enough to really advance our species, and it's just people, you know, wandering about, you know, and that word, like, is not contributing to the singularity. Like, what have you done for the singularity today? You know, it's so stupid. I hesitate to even call myself a transhumanist now, but I guess that I'd say the label still applies to me, because I want to go beyond the Homo sapien. I think the Homo sapien is a failed species, and I think we need to go beyond that. So I'm still a transhumanist in name only. But I'm definitely not, you know, part of the community anymore.
Do they make a fetish out of technology, or they worship technology?
Yeah, they do. They worship money. They worship money and technology. They think technology is the key to money, and they think money is the key to progress, and they think progress is the key to transhumanism. It's all the same.
Aren't there, like, a lot of wealthy Silicon Valley types involved?
Yeah, there are. Some of them are really smart, and they secretly agree with us, you know. They don't come out and say it, but they'll send me emails and say, you know, like, I'm still with you, you know. But then they won't admit it.
I wish all these people would come out in public and just say it.
No, they have too much of an economic risk there.
Why does it
they need to,
like,
stay employed.
I don't know. It takes, like, these Jewish girls to, like, you know, put their face on it.
I guess they don't want to lose their jobs like anybody else. They're afraid of telling the truth, because in this society, telling the truth means being unemployed. People that have high-paying jobs that tell the truth are not very common. So, you know, if you can manage to stay employed in this society while publicly telling the truth, you're doing a great job. So, like, everybody has alternate identities now.
Do you see a society sort of dissolving into, like, a idiocracy, and, like, you see a humanity, like, continuing further and further decline until it gets... I mean, it kind of already is at that level of idiocracy, but...
it's getting worse and worse. It's going to be, like, the Lego movie, you know, like Brave New World. Everybody is going to be so happy, and everybody is going to be so mindless, and they're not going to notice or care. So the good thing about that is that will encourage more secessionist movements, you know, from people who think for themselves. So, you know, like, how much longer is it going to last? You know, people are getting the fuck out. They've been getting the fuck out, and, you know, it's going to continue. So by the time that they've become, like, by the time they have gone full retard, like, I don't think we're going to be around anymore, you know? By the time they're, like, so engrossed that you can't even talk to somebody without them giving you an automated response, like, I think we'll be somewhere else.
Do you think, like, the political correctness will keep increasing, or will reach, like, a breaking point?
I think it reached a breaking point already. The politically incorrect masses are now the proletariat resistance. The the new resistance is politically incorrect. The only people that are really like totalitarian about how you should think are the people in power, and they all have a bunch of money. So I actually believe that we are the majority now. It's just that we're the only ones that have publicly spoken about it. But I really think we are the majority now.
People in like a corporate environment are forced to conform to it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess that they just wait around for us to say things that they can, and then eventually they can say them 5 years later. I don't know.
In your book, Axodexia, you talk about the theme of sort of a transcending humanity in your book, and I think this was before you got into transhumanism, when the book takes place, but you get into that in your book.
Yeah. Yeah, I was always into transhumanism since I was really young, because I always felt that I was different from humanity, you know, and that the other people in my human species just were missing something. And I always met like a few other humans who also seemed like they saw through it all. And, you know, at the time I was like, we're the transhumanists, you know? Like, I saw that as kind of like a subculture in itself. It's completely different now, though. Like, if you can make sense of that, the transhumanists were like the people who were leading civilization into something different back then, you know?
Do you think neo-reaction or, like, alternative right ideas have the potential to, like, displace the current intelligentsia or to become mainstream or anything like that?
No, absolutely not. I think that while we're the majority, that people are not going to be public about it for a very long time. And sadly to say, by the time it does reach critical mass and people are public, it will be as watered down as social justice is now. It'll sound like, oh, well, now at our university, we accept all forms of thought, including libertarianism and republicanism. So, you know, like, we have equal rights for free speech of all ideologies. They'll ruin it, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think that we're fucked, though. Like, as much as some people think that we're fucked, I'm going to say that we're not. And we're not fucked because we can do our own thing. We're not fucked because eventually we can go off and form our own nation. And before we do that, we can still make art. We can still make music. We can still write. We can still have podcasts like this. So we're not so fucked. And if you want to make a bunch of money, you can start your own company and you can live by your own rules. And it is possible to make people, how do I put this? I know people that run really big companies that are really powerful, that are not public about their ideas, but in private, you know, they have a private account, you know, and they express their ideas there, and, you know, and they have a lot of money. They're just strategic about it. They subliminally implement more heretical ideas into their companies, and, you know, they're just crafty.
I really want to know who these people are.
I really can't publicly name anybody, of course. But let's just say
really
that
you're intriguing.
It's been going on for a while. And I think that these people they laugh at us for being so public about our views. You know? Mm-hmm. Because it's like they've been doing this for years, you know, and they're so successful, and they're just like more covert about it.
Mm-hmm. Probably smarter.
Yeah. I'm honestly sick of, you know, being in this position, and I don't know, it gets tiring. You know, I had to delete my Twitter account. And,
having excrement thrown at you?
Huh. Yeah, like, I don't want to be in the middle of the culture wars. I'd rather be making stuff. I'd rather be doing stuff. I'd rather be creating. I'd rather be writing. I don't want to be another monkey flinging shit, even if I'm the right kind of monkey. You know?
Yeah.
I just don't want to go down there. So.
Are you against psychiatry, and do you think it makes it stigmatizes people as pathological if they think differently?
Yeah, I've been saying that for a while. Mental illness is what people in society consider unpopular to think. Now, not to say that there aren't actual mental illnesses, but people who think differently are often labeled as mentally ill. Like, people were labeled as mentally ill for being homosexual back in the day. Homosexuality was a mental illness. So it's only a matter of time before, you know, I had homophobia, right? Isn't that an illness? They call it a phobia. Like, transphobia, Islamophobia. Isn't
mm-hmm.
that, like, some kind of pathology?
Mm-hmm. Have you ever been diagnosed with a mental illness?
I have.
You don't have to answer that if you don't want to.
Yeah, no, I was. I thought for myself, and I was very public about it, and I broadcast my opinions, and yeah, they called me crazy for it.
I was listening to the interview you did with Andy Nowicki back at Alternative Ride, and you were saying, like, in your book, there's similar themes to his book, The Columbine Pilgrim.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were both outsiders. His character and the Columbine Pilgrim and my character in Asphyxia were both outsiders who did not get along with our peer groups, and we both found another way, you know, through our alienation and through our loneliness, we were able to see more and we were able to understand more, and that brought us to more awareness. So, the books are, they're not, even in the same genre, but there's a similar sense of detachment from society that later becomes something very powerful.
And you made a comment. This is interesting. He was about Columbine, and I don't want to get you into too much trouble, but Andy said that Dylan and Eric were bullied for being weak, and you made a comment. You said they were bullied for being strong.
I think that they were mentally strong, but they were physically weak. I guess they were too weak to really, I don't know, it depends on how you define weak and strong. I definitely think that they were mentally stronger than the kids they went to school with, and that's why they were bullied, but they were obviously physically weak, but that they got sick of being physically weak, and they killed a bunch of people. So, you know, who's to say?
And the other theme in Acidexia is with the internet, and when you escaped from the mental institution, you actually used, this was back in the 90s, and you used the internet to meet people, and then those people helped you escape. But you've seen sort of a, you've said there's like a decline in the internet now that the masses are using it. There's not, it's really lost its meaning.
Yeah, it has. Something like that could never happen today, because when I was talking to people back then, it was just like outsiders and freaks and independent thinkers online, nerds, assholes, losers, fun people. But there's no way that could happen now. But there are things like darknet, you know, that are similar to how the internet was then. So.
How do you think you would have been if you were, like, born in a different time where there was no internet, or, like, you were in some, like, super secluded area, or, like, you didn't have access to all of these ideas and everything?
I don't think I would really be that much different. I think I would have still become a writer. I think I was secluded growing up, and I started writing things online, and other people found them. It wasn't just like I found people online and I was like, oh, I've been thinking that my whole life. It's more like I wrote what I was thinking, and then people came to me and were like, hey, have you heard this band? Have you read this book? You know, like, like that. So, I mean, I think you can be completely isolated from culture and you can still have amazing ideas and you can still write about them. And you might not be able to, like, critique culture as much, but you might have better insight into the human condition because you're so secluded. Maybe if I was more secluded, then I would be, then I wouldn't look like I do now.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of one of the chapters in your book is called The Physical Appearance of Liberals. So it's sort of about how people might sort of stereotype like your physical appearance. And how, but the point you're making is now a lot of the people you would stereotypically think as leftist by the way they dressed are not necessarily that. Is that, I mean, I haven't read the book,
because,
but that's what the chapter seems to be about.
Yeah, because if you're dressing in a countercultural way right now, you're probably not a leftist, because if you are a leftist, you're probably in a suit and a tie, you know. I guess the exception would be like the extreme left, the people on the far left, they dress counterculture, but that they're becoming a part of the far right, you know, they're turning because times are changing and they're anti-establishment, so it's all coming full circle. The horseshoe effect.
People on the far left I know in my life are not becoming far right. They're becoming militantly multicultural and militantly anti-feminist.
No, I hear that too. I think it's a mix. I think the people that are anti-establishment are becoming more right now. But the people that are just like anti-right-wing are becoming further left. So it's the difference between being anti-establishment and being anti-right-wing. It's not the same thing. If you're against the establishment, you're going to be against it no matter what it is.
Right. Yeah, I think the people I'm thinking of are just anti-right wing. Like, the right wing represents, like, evil in their eyes.
Yeah, I think it's going to take them a while to get over that. I try to explain to them, like, what people think and what people say is not bad. What people do is bad. If somebody does something wrong, you know, like comes up to you and punches you in the face, then they're an asshole. If somebody says something you don't agree with, they just don't agree with you.
Right, and that's where that's what I've been thinking a lot, and it's, like, it's this idea, it's, like, you're, like, almost, like, possessed by demons if your thoughts stray from the norm, and you're not judged at all on what you actually do. It's what you say or think or
feel about
something.
You're basically viewed as a bad person, and you're treated as almost like semi-criminal, like you're not
inhuman.
Dehumanized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Like, if you have like the wrong thoughts about like race or gender, then you're like the devil. You have to have like
They're considered more about presentation than action. They're not concerned with merit or, you know, what people actually get done, what people's skills are. They're concerned with how somebody comes off. It's like it's like a beauty pageant to them, where public relations is like more important than what actually goes on. It's all just like who can run the best circus, you know, who can come off the best to the masses. It's all about how they come off, not what they actually do.
Mm-hmm.
This last chapter seems, your last chapter, it's called Blood and Transhumanism. I'm looking this over. It looks really interesting. So you have Homo Futura, Dictator Island, and the Kingdom. Homo Futura, it almost it sounds like something that James O'Meara at Countercurrents might write.
That's funny. He reviewed The New Reaction a couple months ago, and he had similar ideas. I don't know exactly what his stance on that specific thing is, but I think he said that it was just called trad. He said, I just call it trad, what I refer to as the Homo Futura, which is just like the people who are a part of national futurism with the Homo Futura, the new race, the higher free-thinking, you know, nation. He considers that trad. I don't agree with that, because I don't think that means being traditional. There are a lot of traditional people who are fucking idiot sheep. You know, they're fucking like parents. They have children. They're moronic. They watch CNN all the time, and they're the same people.
And what's the Dictator Island about?
Dictator Island was sort of like what I was talking about before, about if we had a nation of people that thought for themselves, right? Like we had a Homo Futura, National Futurist Society. Would we all kill each other? And it sort of like ponders that idea. And then it asks the question, like, would we just become an echo chamber? Would we lose our resistance? Would we lose our power? Would we lose our fight if we were surrounded by people who understood what we did?
Because you kind of need to develop your views, to develop like a deep intellect, you need to be exposed to conflict and to sort of, I guess, things that are unenlightened. To develop, to become enlightened, you need to be exposed to things that are not enlightened.
I'd say yes, because I don't meet very many people who have had easy lives that are very interesting. That there are some nerds that are brilliant, you know, that they have great ideas, but they don't really know what's going on. Like, I consider myself a nerd, but I know most nerds haven't been exposed to the kind of life that I have.
And this article I'm looking over, it's you wrote this on Attack the System. It's called The Thriving Pulse of Decadence. And so you're not rejecting decadence. You're talking about changing the purpose of decadence. Like you talk about the reactionary response to things that are perceived as decadent.
Yeah. I think like to call something decadent because it's gay, like because people are gay, they're decadent, or because people are having a good time at a party, they're decadent. I think that's stupid. Decadence should be about indulging in taboo. It should be a lot more like about the anarch kind of archetype of going to forbidden places and pushing buttons, you know, like a more powerful aesthetic type of decadence.
And you wrote this about your time you spent in Berkeley.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because Berkeley was like really ultra, ultra progressive, trendy, conformist, like zombie, fucking zombie land. So, you know, like you go to Berkeley, and if you're like anybody who thinks for yourself, you're gonna like probably think that you're a fascist because you're in Berkeley. You know, so you're like, holy shit, man, I'm a fascist. It turns out, you're not a fascist if you're in Berkeley and you think everybody's a zombie. You're just someone who goes against the grain. You know, who'd have thunk it?
It's like that where I live, too. You're not, like, a progressive or a socialist. You're, like, morally defunct, like, literally.
But you know what is the most fucked up thing now is that the kids that are growing up in places like Berkeley and Portland, they're rebelling and they're, like, becoming actual fascists because that's how fucked our culture is now. And that's
really
a problem. Yeah, because they're rebelling against the system. And they do that by becoming, like, actual fucking shitheads that want to go around killing people, you know? And I guess if they don't kill people, they're just delusional and living in their head. But, you know, I think if rebelling against the system means, like, talking about how much you want people to die for their ethnicity or for their homosexuality, that's fucking shitty. You know, like, you shouldn't be doing that because the politically correct, you know, system is saying, like, tolerance, diversity. That doesn't mean you should be like, oh, I hate gay people. That's equally stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can hate gay culture. You can hate, you know, like, the gay pride spectacle, but it doesn't mean you have to hate gay people. Gay people have been around since ancient Rome.
I don't hate gay people. I just hate people forcing people to accept homosexuality if they don't want to. You know?
Nobody should be forced to accept anything.
Right, but that's what they're trying to do, you know?
Are you talking about, like, that incident with the pizza place that didn't want to be involved in gay marriage?
Oh, God. Shit, that's so stupid. I'm sorry, but, like, why are these people on the news? How is this significant? People are denied service every single day of their lives. They don't run to the media about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I ran to the media every time a company refused to serve me, man, I would never get off the TV.
Huh.
stupid. I mean, I don't think they're forcing people to be gay. I think they are forcing people to be tolerant of homosexuality, like, through social consequence. And I don't think that it's okay to force anybody to serve anybody or to be tolerant of anything. But at the same time, I'm definitely not going to say that I hate gay people just because the system is gay friendly. You know,
yeah.
I'm bisexual, and I know a lot of people that are gay, and they fucking hate the PC totalitarian bullshit as much as we do. A lot of people on the alternative right are gay themselves. So, like, who cares what somebody's sexuality is? But the problem is what the masses are forcing upon us.
Right. Yep.
We're getting kind of close to the end of the show. Is there anything in your book, The New Reaction, that we didn't touch upon?
I'd say just read it, you know. There's a lot of stuff that I talk about in there, and, yeah, like, read it and hit me up and let me know what you think. I'm always open to talking to new people about these ideas and, yeah, just creating a better culture. Oh, man, that sounded, like, so prog, right? Like, let's create a better culture,
right?
Oh, shit, dude. I fucked up. It's all over. You guys are fun. Thanks for having me on the show.
I would like to thank Rachel Haywire for being on. Check out her book, The New Reaction, and check out our website, Trigger Warning.
Triggerwarning.us.
And I'd also like to thank my co-host, The Truth Will Live.
Yay, thanks. thanks for asking me. This was fun.
That's all we have for today's show. So take care, and we'll be back with you next time.